Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. You can't talk about the history of Columbus without recognizing the cradle of our capital city, Franklinton. Franklinton survived a devastating flood in 1913 and another severe flood in 1959 that led to the completion of the Franklinton flood wall in 2004. The neighborhood has scraped through the hard times, the changing times, but Franklinton is known for its strong sense of community and active community organizations. Later this hour, we're going to talk with a community activist about continuing problems of crime and vacant or substandard housing. We'll also hear about unique programs to build affordable housing and bring fresh food to struggling neighborhoods. I want to remind folks that this is a special broadcast of All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're on location at WOSU at COSI. We have a delightful studio audience, but we welcome your participation as well. You can always give us a call at 614-292-8513, or you could email us at allsides@wosu.org. To learn more about this historic neighborhood, tonight you can watch the broadcast premiere of Columbus Neighborhoods, Franklinton, and Downtown on WOSU-TV at 8 p.m. This is the fifth in a series of documentaries produced by WOSU Public Media as part of the Columbus Bicentennial Celebration. Joining us now is Kevin Ballard. He's the vice president of Gladden Community House. It's a settlement house serving Franklinton and its surrounding neighborhoods. Kevin also edits the Franklinton News, a community newspaper published by Gladden Community House. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Thank you.
We met first back in 2009 when you were preparing to reclaim the Franklinton News. It had gone under the year before,
right?
And you were bringing it back.
The Franklinton News has been going since 1974, but yes, we shut it down for 6 months for lack of funding. Neighborhood people stepped up. Franklinton Kiwanis Club paid for an issue. The Franklinton Dental Group paid for an issue, and finally we got some neighborhood partnership program funding, and then United Way funding, and we got it back on its feet.
What did that represent in terms of the history of the neighborhood? It felt to me emblematic of something.
Well, I mean, it's a very long time for the paper to be going, and it sort of holds the neighborhood together. It lets everybody know what's going on. It's a compiled paper. And so all our different groups, the Franklinton Area Commission, the Development Association, the Ministerial Association, the library, everybody combines news so everybody knows what's going on in the neighborhood. I like to think of it as the glue that kind of holds the neighborhood together. So I was very sad to see it go, and I'm glad to have it back.
We talked earlier, I mentioned earlier about the flood wall, 2004, another big turning point for the area. It didn't seem at the time like very much was happening after that, but tell us about it.
It's happening gradually. People thought it would happen quickly, and no, but big changes are happening gradually. Franklinton was put under floodplain restrictions in 1978, which shut down any new construction or any improvement of existing properties beyond a certain amount. So we were stuck in time for 25 years where we could not develop the neighborhood. So the finishing of the flood wall in 2004 changes the rules. Now we can start growing and developing again. And we've got a lot of different people involved, the cities involved, the development associations involved, outside groups, and we're seeing some gradual, serious improvement, property values for residents and for businesses. So it's a huge, slow change.
I was amazed to know that you couldn't build anything there for something like 80 years.
Well, it's, by law, I think the floodplain restrictions from the federal government kicked in 78 and really stopped it. You could build before that, but it would get wiped out by floods. It wasn't against the law. Franklinton was founded in 1797 and had its first flood in the spring of 1798. It's been flooding for a long time. And so that put a certain restriction on how much growth you could have in the neighborhood throughout its whole history.
Just want to remind folks, you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's a special broadcast from our home, WOSU's home at COSI. If you have a question or comment for our guest, Kevin Ballard, Vice President of the Gladden Community House, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And I want to welcome our studio audience to the conversation as well. If you want to step up to the mic, you have a question or comment, you can also raise your hand with your cards, and we'll grab those and get to it. 614-292-8513, though, is the number to call if you want to join the conversation. So How much does that affect a community now that you've watched that not happen, and now you've seen things start to happen? The population didn't change much for a very long time that way. If there was nothing built new, there was nothing new to move in.
Right, and in fact, it regressed, because over those 25 years, we lost a lot of housing. Houses were abandoned, torn down. Huge amount of housing disappeared between the 70s and the 90s, and our population in the neighborhood declined.
Like, by how much? You know?
How many houses were destroyed? Yeah. I don't know. You might be able to ask one of our later guests.
Okay.
But I don't know exactly how much. I think our population has declined 8,000 or 10,000 people since the 70s, and a lot fewer children, a lot fewer families with children. And so that's had an impact on the neighborhood. Is just kind of hollowed out for a while, and now it's starting to fill in again and grow again. And we've got a lot of new families moving in, a lot of new things happening, new groups coming in, Franklin Arts District, Franklinton Gardens, a lot of new energy, Franklinton Cycle Works. So we're seeing really like spring growth in the neighborhood, all this new growth that we haven't seen for a long time.
Today is a day of celebration for Columbus. It's its 200th birthday, and I'll be asking folks later on about that self-image problem that Columbus residents sometimes have. But what about Franklinton's self-image these days?
Well, it's never simple to try to describe a complex community. It's 15,000 people in Franklinton, about 3 square miles, and so we have all kinds of different groups, people, backgrounds, very diverse community. And so I don't know that I can say anything simple about how Franklinton feels about itself, but I do think there's a strong sense of community identity. We fought for the last 30 years to make people quit calling us the Bottoms, because we were floodplains. We were referred to as the Bottoms, but it's sort of a put-down. So we launched a campaign back in the 70s to reclaim the name Franklinton, the historic name Franklinton, and some neighborhood pride in the community based on that name and that history. In 74, the Area Commission changed its name from the West Side Area Commission to the Franklinton Area Commission, and we changed the name of the paper from the Bottoms Up to the Franklinton News.
A little self-imposed denigration, perhaps?
Yeah, and there are many people who live in the neighborhood who still refer to it as the Bottoms, and that's okay. If you live there or you were born there, you can call it that, but if you don't, you can't. So I do think there's a stronger sense of neighborhood identity. Now, it's going to vary. Everybody's, you know, there's a lot of different people in the neighborhood. But I do think Franklinton's self-concept has risen steadily over the last 20 years.
Let me ask you, how many people who live there were born there? I know you're going to give me an exact number, but do you have a sense about that?
Well, you have to break it into groups.
Okay.
We have some people who've lived there for a very long time, many generations. I know one of my staff, her family still owns the house on Cypress, or the property on Cypress, that her great-great-grandfather bought from Lucas Sullivan. So there are neighborhood people who've been there a very long time. There's some transients. We have some people moving in and out all the time because it's a low-income neighborhood. That's just the nature of low-income neighborhoods. We're 70% rental properties, so there's a lot of movement. A significant number of people have called Franklinton their home for at least 3 generations, 4 generations, maybe some 5 generations.
How long have you lived there?
Well, I don't live there. I work there. I've worked there 25 years. I live just up the street in the Short North. I almost bought a house in Franklinton back in 1987, and that house at that time was selling for $40,000. And it was back on the market 20 years later for $40,000 because there of the floodplain restrictions, there was no increase in property values. So people in the neighborhood have been frozen in their property values, and we're finally seeing property values start to rise, and hopefully people who live there will get some benefit from that.
You said that change comes gradually. Why does it have to come so gradually? It's been 8 years now since the flood wall went in. There hasn't been that much change. How do you explain that? Is it Franklinton? Do you think it would be the same for another part of town?
I think there was a lot of infrastructure that had to happen. They have removed some public housing on the east side of Franklinton recently, and they've fixed a couple of bridges.
Helps.
And they've gotten, I think at this point, everything in place that East Franklinton, the part east of 315, east of the railroad tracks, closer to downtown, is really ready now for development. And I know the Development Association has got some properties there and some private developers. So that is going to start moving. But it took a while, I think, to get all the infrastructure in place for people to be willing to invest money in the neighborhood. There was a little hesitation, I think, at first. The golden rule is who's got the gold makes the rules. Until people with money are willing to spend it in Franklinton, invest it in Franklinton, nothing was going to happen. And I think that's gradually happening. You know, people did not jump in. Although there was a lot of property speculation, I think at first people thought they'd have a golden egg. If they could just grab property values in Franklinton, they could flip these houses and make a lot of money, and that has not happened.
In fact, do you think that's part of the problem, that there's a lot of absentee ownership, that there's people thinking they would make a quick buck and didn't really have a personal investment in the community?
I think that may have slowed things down. I can't prove that. I don't have the stats at my fingertips, but that could well have slowed things down, that people over-expected change, and that kind of kept it from happening in a steadier way.
A lot of people think about, oh, Franklin is the next Short North. Would that be a dream of yours, or how would you distinguish it from where the trajectory of the Short North?
Well, you know, that joke was out there as soon as the flood wall was done, and they said soon we'll have cappuccino in Franklinton. Well, we already did. Milo's has been selling cappuccino in Franklinton for over a decade, so that's not an issue. It's a very different place, and I don't think we're going to see a Short North kind of development, in part because our housing stock is different. We don't have the solid old Victorian brick homes that are worth renovating like German Village or the Short North has. Ours are more frame houses. Some can be rehabbed, some will just have to be replaced. So it doesn't have the residential infrastructure to build a Short North or a German Village out of. But, you know, you said it's been very slow and nothing's happened. The city came in and did 40 Home Again homes over the last couple of years. Boulevard Homes has done 40 new homes. The Development Association has been doing homes steadily. There's a huge amount of residential development that's happening quietly all throughout the neighborhood. So it hasn't been entirely quiet.
Okay. Who or what is most responsible for Franklinton going forward? Sometimes people say the city needs to help us more. We need more, better crime fighting. We need more money, more grants. What do you think is going to propel it forward?
I mean, I think we'll take all of the above. We could use any and all of that. The city has been heavily invested in the neighborhood. They put $1 million into East Franklinton last year. So we feel like the city really is supportive. They are aware that we are the last undeveloped downtown neighborhood. The proximity to downtown, we're right across the river. So I think the city is very interested in seeing us develop. Are there enough resources? Well, I mean, in this economy, everybody's struggling for resources. I think once the economy picks up, I think we have the people and resources in place to make it happen. We don't need something new and magic. We just need a little time and a better economy, national economy. A little more tax support, more private investment. It'll happen, I think. It's just going to take a while.
Well, Kevin Ballard, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Kevin Ballard, he's vice president of the Gladden Community House. We're going to continue our conversation about Franklinton. To learn more about this historic neighborhood, you can watch the broadcast premiere of Columbus Neighborhoods, Franklinton, and Downtown on WOSU-TV at 8 p.m. tonight. This is the fifth in a series of documentaries produced by WOSU Public Media as part of the Columbus Bicentennial Celebration. When we return, we'll continue the conversation. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, America's coming apart around money and morals, says Charles Murray. He's sparked a great debate about why. We'll hear it. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point this afternoon at 1 o'clock on 89.7 NPR News. 33 degrees with some light snow in downtown Columbus. A rain-snow mix today, becoming all rain after 3 o'clock this afternoon. A high near 40 degrees today. A chance of some rain mixing with snow tonight, a low of 27 degrees. Increasing clouds on Wednesday and warmer with a high of 43.
Support for 89.7 comes from Clintonville Academy, offering college prep education for pre-kindergarten through 8th grades and hosting an open house on Sunday, February 26th from 2 to 4 p.m. with faculty and tours available. Details at clintonvilleacademy.org.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Today on All Sides, we're talking about community efforts to meet the challenges of Franklinton, a historic urban neighborhood of Columbus. Later this hour, we'll hear about unique programs to build affordable housing and bring fresh food to the neighborhood. And tonight, you can watch the broadcast premiere of Columbus Neighborhoods, Franklinton, and Downtown on WOSU-TV at 8 p.m. Joining us now is Rebecca Hunley. She grew up in Franklinton, attending local schools, including Central High School and the current site of COSI, at the current site of COSI. She moved back to Franklinton from Chicago 8 years ago and restored an older home where she now lives. Rebecca currently is active with the Franklinton Area Commission, Safety Task Force, Leader Spark, as well as participating in community projects and events across the city. So welcome to the show, Rebecca.
Thank you.
I have to ask you, why'd you move back?
Mom, she's still in the neighborhood. As Kevin pointed out, we have several generations of Franklintonians. And our folks have been around since 1956. We were the new people on the block when we moved in to the house on Rogers. It was an Italian-Greek mix of neighborhood, and they were already in their fourth generation, so we were forever the new people.
The newbies. But you stayed. You've stayed.
Well, I took a 25-year hiatus, and yes, now I'm back forever with the housing market as it is. So, yeah, you'll find me in the same house probably when I'm 95 or until my knees give out.
Vacant housing and crime are two topics on the top of any safety checklist in any neighborhood, particularly for Franklinton. So what's the relationship between those right now?
Well, as you have read, I'm sure, along with the rest of Columbus, that Franklinton is unfortunately the home of the most fatal fires. We have about two people a year on average die from fires. By my count, in the last 5 years, there are eight children who have died. None of them had reached their fifth birthday. And it's a complex issue. It's not just that they're old houses. They are old houses. Some of them were signed off on by John Quincy Adams. My mother's plot was signed off by Thomas Jefferson. So, you know, you've got some older housing stock. But there are also some events that Kevin talked about, which is a moratorium in the 70s for rehabbing and rebuilding them. Unfortunately, a large number of homes went to investment property owners, some of whom have never been back since the time that they actually purchased the properties. Some of them are out-of-state investor groups that have changed names every quarter, it seems like, but do not take care of the properties. And then you have issues with vacant homes, with squatters, with homeless, with kids, with whatever, and you have fires there. But then you also have those folks who are the investment landlords who are not in New York or Florida. They are in Pickerington and Worthington and Arlington and Hilliard, wherever they live, but not in Franklinton, who have either neglected their property due to finances or willfully neglected them and continued to have people in them when they knew that they were not safe and, in fact, were a fire hazard.
Oh, the Christmas Eve fire that killed three people that's really charged up the city about this led to a host of misdemeanor charges against the owner of the dwelling, a man who had rented the house even though city inspectors had deemed it uninhabitable. Are you satisfied with the way the city has responded by requiring regular timetabled visits to houses ordered vacated? Is that enough?
No. I think that it needs to be a collaborative effort like everything else that needs to happen to kind of foster this renaissance that we're seeing. And as we talk about these issues, I just want to point out we do have 200 new dwellings in Franklinton. So, you know, graduate students at OSU, come on down. We're open for business. what's going on with that, a piece of it, is that, first of all, the city code enforcement is underfunded. The laws that we have now cannot be enforced with the staff they have on hand. It's funded out of the general budget, should be out of the capital budget, because there seems to be a lot of money there for bridges and other things. And so, gee whiz, you know, think about what that $22 million would have done in the code enforcement area. And put some teeth in the laws. I mean, $550 maximum fine for three lives seems pretty insignificant. compared to, you know, to what happened to those people. And it's just a misdemeanor crime. And getting the process to the point where people can actually be prosecuted in environmental court is extremely slow. We've had burned out homes in Franklinton for 10 years. Same house, burned three times, 10 years. So the process is slow. The laws do not have teeth in them. And they're almost unenforceable because the staff is so bare bone at this time. So funding needs to happen, and if the general fund isn't going to get it done, let's go to the capital fund where there's cash, because these are houses. That's capital.
So these regular visits, you're saying you'll believe it when you see it?
I know that they happen, but on the other hand, you have collusion between people who may not be able to rent just any old ware because they have certain business interests that may not be compatible with regular neighborhoods and people that want them there. So in some cases, the landlords are renting to a 19-year-old who has 6 months rent in cash. Well, gee, where'd that come from? And so they know the house is uninhabitable. There are some actually on my block. They don't have furnaces in them. There's no back window in the one of them. And yet it's rented. And it's rented because those folks can't find housing elsewhere, or they don't know to go someplace else. Some people in the neighborhood have just kind of moved around the neighborhood and wouldn't live somewhere else, and they don't really understand that renters have rights and that they can, you know, they can get some justice if they needed to, but who's going to help you when your stuff's on the curb when you come home? So there's some of that going on, and I think that code is doing their job. They pay a lot of attention to Franklinton with the exceedingly small staff they have, and we have been very pleased with their performance in that regard. And I know that Janine A. and Paul and Mike and the rest of them are out there doing their job every day. We see them a lot, and we talk to them a lot. So they're doing what they can do. The citizens are doing what they can do. At this point, it's more of a systemic approach with what the laws are, how willing you are to enforce them, and making them worth enforcing, which means that, you know, $550 for a fatal fire with a known hazard and had been rented previously in the same condition, willfully bypassing the system, it just doesn't seem to equal out.
My guest is Rebecca Hunley. She is active with the Franklinton Area Commission, Safety Task Force, LeaderSpark, as well as community projects and events across the city. If you have a question or comment for her, our conversation is about Franklinton right now. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your question or comment there. And then, of course, I want to once again invite our studio audience here at COSI to put forth your questions. I promise I won't ignore them like I did the first one. I'm just getting used to this. So, from Nikki, she has a comment. She goes, I'd like to recognize the Dowd Center, a facility for after-school educational and support activities for homeless and previously homeless children and families. Successful, unique, important. Can you speak about it?
Yes, actually, it's where LeaderSpark is hosted. In fact, we're about midstream right now. The Dowd Center has been around for quite some time, and from the outside, it looks like an old warehouse because it was an old warehouse. Inside, it's fabulous, and you can see the artwork of the kids who go there. In fact, one of the LeaderSpark projects was to give a harvest party in case someone was offended by Halloween. And it was a great time. We had a fabulous time with them. They've been very generous to LeaderSpark and have reached out to kids who are, I mean, the kids of those, the friends of those homeless children are also participating in that after-school activity and trying to stabilize those kids who've been to two schools, seven schools in the same year, and trying to settle into a more routine situation. Adrian Corbett, who is the CEO there, has been a member of the commission for some time. And, you know, we've had a collaborative relationship with that center for various and sundry purposes. Hopefully, I'll call Adrian this afternoon and ask her if she'd like to host 30 volunteers on February the 24th, Adrian, for an overnight and a neighborhood cleanup.
No pressure, Adrian.
Yeah, no problem.
Now, I think if I remember correctly, it was the Kiwanis or there's some that renovated that warehouse. It was a civic group from Dublin and Worthington or something that came in and worked on that.
I can't speak to that. I'm not sure of that history, but I can tell you that throughout the Dowd Center, there are different rooms that that people have funded, and the Kiwanis name is certainly in there along with a number of other groups and organizations that were instrumental in getting it set up and renovated.
So you moved back 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
What's the biggest change you've seen in just 8 years?
I think that two things. One is that that new growth, that Renaissance piece has started when the flood wall was. I came back and I started gutting my house with or without. I think I came just at the brink of when it was solidified and caused a great stir. I came home because my mom was here, and people were very interested in my house, like way overly interested in my house. And I'm like, what is the deal? Well, no one's done anything for years. And I'm like, okay. So, I mean, because I'm from here. What? What's the problem? And I had no idea. I mean, I hadn't been paying attention. I've been in Chicago. You know, I've been living in Mexico. I was at someplace else. I mean, I kept track of my mom, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't the same as actually being physically in the neighborhood. So I would have to say the burst of housing and then the second piece of that, which is kind of related, is looking at things more systemically. In the 1980s, when we had some vacant housing that was then being sold off to those investment property owners, Franklinton had the Dirty Dozen of property lists. You know, it's like those dozen homes or properties that were just eyesores and needed some attention. And so we went about doing whatever it is we needed to do to get the attention and help to get them fixed up or gone or whatever needed to happen. Well, then the 90s came, and the housing crunch happened, and those people who were hanging on, you know, couldn't make it. They'd lay the keys down and go back to Jackson, Ohio, or do whatever they had to do because the house was so far gone by that time you couldn't afford to renovate it. Lots of different things, but the upshot is now is we probably need a Dirty Dozen predatory property owners list, because when I just went on the auditor's website with four or five names that I know for a fact have been shut down as nuisances, have had homes swatted on a regular basis, have been picketed by Franklintonians as a hint that perhaps things are not like they should be after years of writing letters and informing and inviting and cajoling and pushing and prodding, and just wasn't happening. So, you know, you show up in front of their doorstep, it's a whole different kind of day for them. It's kind of interesting. But looking at that more systemic piece, because when I looked at those four or five names and I see that they have 17, 28, 32 properties in Franklinton and across the city, all of them in equally poor shape, we need to start thinking about what we can do. And that's what brought us back to that thing about collaborating with the city and really getting those laws and getting code, you know, collaborating and getting that stuff moving forward. So it's not just the onesies and twosies. It's what can we do as a community and as a city to bring the entire community back up to snuff.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go online to the Facebook page and post your question or comment there. My guest is Rebecca Hunley, Franklinton native.
Yeah.
Returned to the fold about 8 years ago from Chicago. I have a comment here from the audience, and it just says microphone on it, so I don't know exactly what that means. If you want to come on up to the microphone, I guess. Okay. Welcome.
You have my card, but I think I can remember what I had in mind. You know, there are not enough public resources to legislate the change that's needed in a neighborhood that's challenged. And it's not possible through rules and regulation to bring out a change in the character of people that might need to be redirected as to their contributions that need to be made. And so I want to recognize a great example of a community activist that sits before us today. I've had limited partnership with Rebecca. I'm Jim Lashbrook from the Hilltop, but I have collaborated in a very small way with Rebecca, and she is a shining example of what we need. And I think the question really is, as a volunteer, people ask, well, why do you do it, or do you get paid for it, or whatever? And I think that what we need to hear from Rebecca today is a little bit of insight that might inspire others to be a community activist, because she is a faithful presence in her neighborhood as a leader.
Thank you. That is not a paid
not a paid comment.
Spot, but thank you. Actually, I'm not sure if it's generational or it's just my family. There were a bunch of us. There were 8 kids. And, you know, if there was something to do in our neighborhood, if you could walk, you could work. If you've got time to lean, you've got time to clean. There were all kinds of little sayings that went around our house. And
I'm going to remember some of those when I get home tonight.
Yes, indeedy. And Jim's right. You know, it's not all the city. I think that Franklinton could do a better job as all of the organizations come together. And at one point, there was a monthly meeting, kind of like what everybody's doing across the entire organization or across the entire community. And we could really do a little tightening up with our marketing and letting people know, you know, that you're 5 minutes from everything and really talking about the advantages of living in the neighborhood. When I was a kid, there were 36,000 people, and it was a walking neighborhood just as it is now. And, in fact, I noticed as over time that I found neighborhoods just like Franklinton wherever I went. And the last one was Oak Park, Illinois. Strangely enough, I always lived like a block from the main thoroughfare, food and transport and from the library because, you know, it's my favorite place. But in the neighborhoods, Jim is correct. You know, it is a collaborative effort. It's not just the city. Why don't they do that and they do this? We are them. And when I came back home, I just thought, you know, safe, clean, quiet, and pretty. I remember that, and I want that again. And so started organizing some neighbors and talking to other neighbors. And we've tried to reach out more now to collaborate with the whole West Side. So we do a litter pickup in the spring and the fall with the Hilltop as a orchestrated effort. We are actively inviting groups in. Also, Keep Columbus Beautiful has helped with the Sullivan Avenue corridor in getting groups within the community to start and to really rebuild that pride in being from Franklinton. And we've got folks that have been there for a long time, and they've kind of been, I don't know, not beaten down, but they've sort of settled in a way that is not good. And to help refresh their spirit and to let them understand. And when you see people out on Broad Street, when you see from Wilson Road or Demarest Road down to downtown, you see anywhere from 50 to 150 people out all at once. People come out and they will actually, the homeless folks come out and help pick up litter. You know, everybody's kind of in it together and it's a community effort. Last year, Pat Marvin, my neighbor on Dakota, put together the best national night out ever. We had probably, I counted 387 heads when I was counting, and I'm sure I missed a few, but it was a fabulous event. FAD has brought Urban Sprawl, Go West, and there are events now that people can come to see Franklinton and see the things that are going on with getting the facades done on Broad Street right around Jones Avenue. Some of you might know it as Tommy's Diners area. So, you know, Trent Smith with the Franklinton Board of Trade and Jim Sweeney and company. So there are a lot of different efforts going on in parallel and in concert and overlapping and feeding one to the other in the volunteer corps, but we need more people to do that. So I feel that Franklinton, like the Hilltop, needs to advertise better. Like, this is who we are, this is where we are, come on down.
We have a comment from the audience. Pat Wynn Brown, welcome.
Hi, Rebecca, I'm so impressed with the work that you've done in moving back to Franklinton. I was born on the Hilltop, and one of my, in my first mail route jobs, I was a mail carrier, one of the first women mail carriers in Columbus during college, and I was mail carrier in Franklinton. And there are so many West Siders who are in different parts of our commerce and business and the fire department and the police department and entertainment. And whether we live in Franklinton or the West Side or not, I think that we should be able to, in our own spheres, influence the work that you're doing there, whether we volunteer directly with Franklinton or in our own areas, advocate for Franklinton, advocate for the Hilltop and for the West Side. The West Side has been ignored by the city. The city is now coming together, and I thank Mayor Coleman and all of City Council and all the work that is being done by the associations, but it's been ignored. I still have relatives on the West Side. I'm there frequently. I love the West Side. I love the way I was brought up. I love the working class people that I was brought up with, and the West Side has taught me everything I know today about how to succeed in life. So when people like you move back to Franklinton, I'm just so impressed with what you've done. But all of us, no matter where we live, wherever we work, We need to be able to bring that to bear. When three children die on Christmas Eve and the landlord is fined $550 and these fires continue, we've got Westsiders in the fire department. We have Westsiders in law enforcement. We all need to do something. So this is a clarion call out to all my fellow Westsiders. Ich bin ein Westsider.
Thank you. Well, I just want to say thank you to Rebecca Hunley. She grew up here. She returned, and we're glad you could. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having us, and we appreciate the time to talk about our neighborhood and the things that are going well and the things that you know, we can come together and do better with.
Rebecca Hunley, she's active with the Franklinton Area Commission, Safety Task Force, LeaderSpark, and many other community projects and events across the city. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation about Franklinton. If you want to join it, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And once again, remind our listeners that we are at WOSU at COSI with a live studio audience. Very exciting. So we welcome their contribution as well. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
WOSU Public Media will host Chefs in the City Thursday, May 3rd from 5:30 until 10 p.m. at WOSU at COSI. Tickets are on sale now. Celebrity chef Hubert Keller and several of Central Ohio's finest chefs will participate in live cooking demonstrations, preparing dishes for audience members to enjoy. The event will also feature a cookbook signing, a silent auction, and will be taped for TV. A limited number of tickets are on sale now. Visit WOSU.org/chefs for more information.
This is 89.7 NPR News in 20 minutes. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues with Hour 2 of the program and a discussion of Columbus's bicentennial, celebrating the past, present, and future of the city with Columbus Mayor Michael Coleman and a panel. Stay with us for more of our broadcast from WOSU at COSI on All Sides with Ann Fisher from 11 till noon. 33 degrees with some light snow in downtown Columbus. Rain mixing with snow today, becoming all rain after 3 o'clock this afternoon, a high near 40 degrees. There's a chance of some rain mixing with snow tonight, a low of 27. Increasing clouds on Wednesday, a high of 43 degrees. And rain likely on Thursday, with a high near 50. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Today on All Sides, we're talking about community efforts to meet the challenges of Franklinton, a historic urban neighborhood of Columbus. Tonight, you can watch the broadcast premiere of Columbus Neighborhoods, Franklinton, and Downtown on WOSU-TV at 8 p.m. Joining us now is Jim Sweeney. He's the executive director of the Franklinton Development Association, the community development corporation formed to lead the revitalization of Franklinton. Welcome to the show, Jim Sweeney.
Thanks for having me.
Also joining us, Patrick Kaufman. He's the co-director of Franklinton Gardens, a nonprofit urban farm located in Franklinton. Welcome to the show, Patrick.
Thanks for having me.
And just to remind our listeners, if you want to give us a call, 614-292-8513. When you speak to us, you will be speaking to everyone listening to the show and also the folks in our live studio audience here at WOSU at COSI. So you can email us if you're shy, wosu.org/allsides. Jim, we were talking earlier about the city's response to the Christmas Eve fire that took the lives of three people. One of the problems, of course, is that there isn't enough housing available for people who fit the category of the people that were living in that house. What do you do about that? You can build new houses, but what do you do about people who are willing to live like that, don't know any better, and how do you approach that problem? Can you build your way out of it?
Well, you can build your way out of some of it, I think. We are building housing, excuse me, in Franklinton. We can provide people better options. We can take on the tough challenges of rehabbing the housing that's there, which is a significant challenge. I mean, the houses there, as Kevin and Rebecca both said, are very old. They're small. their frame houses. Many of them were built before indoor plumbing, so they've had bathrooms retrofitted into them, sometimes not the best way. They're functionally obsolete in that modern conveniences don't fit them exactly. They have significant environmental issues, lead, asbestos. These are things you have to deal with, all of these issues, in order to put people into a house safely. And it's an expensive undertaking, to be sure. So there's no simple solution. There are houses, there are many vacant houses in the neighborhood that people could be living in, however, they're unsafe. Our approach has been to find different grant programs and different partners like Habitat for Humanity or Columbus Housing Partnership or the NRP group out of Cleveland and partner with them and build new places. It's very expensive to build a house. It doesn't cost anything less to build a house in Franklinton than it does in New Albany. Actually, it costs more because you're dealing with old infrastructure. There's other environmental issues you need to deal with. But we think we found a few approaches that have been powerful. We have been had a hand in, I think, 150 new housing units in Franklinton since 2002. It's no easy solution. It's unfortunate. It's terrible. It's tragic that people live in terrible conditions, and sometimes these tragedies occur. But we continue to work through that.
Michael in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you? I'm glad to hear everybody's working hard. Nice volunteers there in Franklinton. And I have a question about the structure, how the city's set up to deal with inner city and in particular Franklinton. They're folks that go out and do the code enforcement, and the permitting department all seems to be set up on a basis where it has to be self-sufficient. And to me, that seems to be kind of a detriment to those folks that are in the inner city and they own an older home. They can't afford much. For example, if somebody kicks your door down in Franklinton or the Near East Side, you have to go get a permit to replace it. It's very expensive, and you don't even get a inspector to come out and look at it. So it seems to be kind of a fee-driven operation there in some regards, and they don't have reduced fees for low-income people, that sort of thing. So it seems to be hurting Franklinton and the inner city. So I wondered if that could be changed.
Jim Sweeney?
Sure. We pay fees also. we pull permits also. The point of the permitting process is to increase safety. It's to ensure that things are put together properly so the tragedies don't occur. And there, for inspections and things, there are costs associated with that. In a way, you might look at them as user fees, costs that aren't borne by the general public necessarily, but costs that are borne by somebody actually doing the development. I can't defend the system necessarily. We could be here all day talking about how the city permitting process works, and that's not my area of expertise by any means. But it's something that we've worked within and are eager to help other people work within that too.
Thank you, Michael, for that call. We appreciate it. Mort in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mort.
Yes, thank you. I'd like to suggest an innovative approach. I have nothing to do with Franklinton. But if you were to go to a website like Inhabitat, you would see a variety of new construction architecture and construction methods. Ohio State students participated in something like that at the mall this spring. If you were to clear a few acres and do away with any codes like New Albany's All Georgian or, manicured lawns and open it to all sorts of innovative construction, it would be a polyglot of designs, but it could attract a lot of attention and a lot of new blood to the area.
Well, I would respond to that by clearing a few acres is a very expensive undertaking. Even the Franklinton people own the property that exists there. I've had people suggest to me, why don't we just go buy a block of Franklinton and tear it down and build all new housing there? Several reasons not to do that. Number one, the most important one is buying a block of housing in Franklinton would be very, very, very expensive.
Even in Franklinton.
Even in Franklinton. Okay. It would cost, the houses there are inexpensive, certainly. Some of them can be gotten for under $10,000, but generally they sell for around $25,000 or $30,000. Now, to buy, 40 houses at $30,000 would require a huge capital input at the front end. And unfortunately, money just doesn't flow in that way. It flows in through, you know, what we call gap financing. That is the difference between what it costs to actually do a project and what that project is going to be worth at the end. A quick example of that is if we bought a house for, say, $20,000, that house might actually need $100,000 worth of work. It just does. That's what it costs. As I said before, we don't get price breaks because we're Franklinton. We pay the same price as everybody else, so, and, you know, we'll have our investment in that project would be $120,000. At the end of the day, that house might appraise for $80,000. So you can see why the private sector doesn't get involved yet. The values are just too low. We are able to find different sources to fill that gap and actually do that project. It's not simple. It takes a long time. But what we're seeing, actually, is as we do more and more of these types of projects and other types of projects, we're seeing the values actually start to rise. On Martin Avenue, we saw for the first time this year houses appraised for more than $100,000. That's a significant milestone that we really ought to be celebrating. I think somebody made the point earlier, we don't celebrate this stuff enough. That's absolutely correct.
Thank you, Mort, for that call. Patrick Kaufman, we've been talking a lot about housing stock.
Mm-hmm.
What about garden stock in Franklinton? You've been working there since about 2007, 2008,
yes.
Which
mm-hmm.
is actually a very short period of time when you look at community gardens and the trend toward community gardens. Tell us what you're doing there.
Sure. Well, I should start off by saying that agriculture and Franklinton go much further back than 2007.
Right.
The neighborhood has deep Appalachian roots, and so many of our neighbors have been around backyard gardens or even larger farm productions their entire lives. But as an organization, we started in 2007. It's been mentioned several times that there's been an influx of new families to Franklinton as this revitalization process has been going on. And in 2007, a handful of folks that had recently moved to the neighborhood that were interested in being close to where their food came from and wanted to start to reach out and connect to neighbors. They connected with the city and through a city land bank program had leased a vacant lot for $1 and started to put some seeds in the ground. And over the last few years, we've expanded our operations to now. We have reclaimed a full acre of land in the neighborhood, scattered about the urban landscape on 6 different plots of land, and now produce several thousand pounds of organic produce annually for the neighborhood.
What about getting it out to people and making sure that people understand it and know how to use it?
Sure. There are a lot of challenges that our neighbors face in Franklinton. It's not just a matter of access to produce, which is certainly the biggest issue. Franklinton is a food desert. It lacks a full-service grocery store. And so because most of our low-income neighbors also contend with transportation issues, they're limited to what food they can access at the neighborhood's more than 35 corner stores, gas stations, and fast food restaurants. So there's a shortage of fresh produce in Franklinton, just like any other distressed urban neighborhood. And so the way that we could address that issue most directly was by growing more food ourselves in the neighborhood. And we've developed healthy relationships with Gladden Community House, their pantry, Holy Family Soup Kitchen, and then the Homeless Families Foundation, providing them a lot of the produce that we grow at no cost. We've also, through a healthy corner store project called Fresh Foods Here, have started to work with 3 corner stores in the neighborhood, Family Market, Broad and Princeton Market, and Herbert's Market, trying to improve the exterior and interior of the stores and expand their food offerings to include fresh fruits and vegetables.
How's that going?
Well, like Kevin said, it's a long, long process to see the kind of change that we want to see in Franklinton. And food access is certainly one piece, getting fruits and vegetables into the stores, but it's also a matter of community engagement, talking with our neighbors and educating them on the importance of eating well. You know, our neighbors for so long have had very limited access to fruits and vegetables, and it's been very easy for them to get their hands on cheap, heavily processed foods. And as a result, our neighbors are dealing with chronic health issues such as diabetes, heart disease, obesity. And so we're working against decades and decades of eating habits and it's a challenge. It's going to take a long time, but we're making headway.
We just have a few minutes left. I wanted to ask both of you, and maybe starting with Jim Sweeney, going forward, just to wrap up the show, what do you visualize? It's often being compared, Franklinton's often being compared to Short North. We brought up that earlier. What's your sort of pie-in-the-sky dream for Franklinton in the next 50 years?
Well, that's a good time frame to discuss. Most people say the next 5 years. 50 years is about.
I've never been good at the 5-year plan myself.
Well, I always say the neighborhood didn't get to the condition it's in a short period of time. It's not going to get out of that condition in a short period of time. You know, I hear that Short North reference all the time, and it's you know, we all laugh when we hear that. Clearly, that it's two different kinds of neighborhoods. We see that we have a great opportunity in East Franklinton. To start now, we are working with the city, and the mayor has been incredibly supportive of East Franklinton. We're working with the city on a land use development strategy for that area. We've got some partners in CMHA and Urban Smart Growth. Together, we have control of about 23 acres of land, including some big warehouses. There's an amazing arts community springing up at 400 West Rich, thanks to Chris Sherman and his team down there. We see that as sort of like the Marines area, if you will, the fearless ones that go in and build the beachhead and bring a whole new, like, en masse group of people over into that area. We're trying to develop housing in a way that will be inclusive and available to people of all income ranges, and particularly affordable housing, since that's our specialty, and make it for sale and for rent, and just begin growing a new neighborhood right there, right along the railroad tracks, just west of downtown. And hopefully that energy carries over further westward into the greater Franklinton area. And we'll continue doing what we're doing, that is to say, taking advantage of all the opportunities we can get to buy and rehab houses and build new ones all throughout the neighborhood.
Just about 30 seconds, Patrick Kaufman.
Sure. We've got an opportunity to create a vibrant, healthy local food system in Franklinton that provides access to fresh, healthy, affordable food to its residents. And that involves increased food production, developing more and more abandoned lots into gardens and food production space, and creating new retail outlets for that food to be made available to our neighbors.
Well, thanks for joining us today to tell us about it, Patrick. Patrick Kaufman, he's co-director of Franklinton Gardens, and also Jim Sweeney, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Jim Sweeney, executive director of the Franklinton Development Association. That's all the time we have. Thanks for listening to our conversation about Franklinton. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.